The record 5.29 trillion peso national budget for 2023 approved by Philippine House lawmakers. We'll discuss that with Albay Representative Edsel Lagman. The Philippine government sees no reason to respond to the International Criminal Court prosecutor's renewed request to probe the Duterte administration's drug war. The death toll from Typhoon Karding rises to 11. And 2 million households in Florida left without power as Hurricane Ian lashes through the state. Hi, I'm Carmina Constantino. Dateline Philippines begins right now. And thanks for joining us. For those of you watching us on YouTube and on Facebook, glad you could join us today. Philippine House lawmakers have approved the government's record-high budget of 5.29 trillion pesos for 2023. The Departments of Education and Public Works got the lion's share of the budget with around 700 billion pesos each. 289 lawmakers voted in favor of the spending bill, while three progressives voted against it. They believe the proposed budget fails to address the country's most pressing problems. They spent a considerable amount of time trying to convince their colleagues to realign a portion of the surveillance and anti-insurgency funds to social services.
Majority or 50.2% ng budget ng Office of the President para sa susunod na taon ay para sa confidential and intelligence funds. Mas dihamak na mas malaki kaysa dun sa Office of the Vice President. Speaking in another way, 7 times yung confidential and intelligence funds sa Office of the President.
Ang dahilan po niyan, Mr. Speaker, dear colleague, as head of state and government, the President of the Republic of the Philippines plays a central role in national security management and decision-making, primarily in terms of giving broad guidance and impetus to the formulation and implementation of national security policies.
The budget bill will now be submitted to the Senate. House Speaker Martin Romualdez is hoping senators will also take haste in passing it after President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. certified the measure as urgent.
We are confident that our good senators will also act with dispatch in having this most important piece of legislation approved in order for both houses to ratify the budget bill in time for the signature of the President before of the end of the fiscal year.
The Philippine government will no longer respond to International Criminal Court prosecutor Karim Khan's renewed request to probe the Duterte administration's drug war. Solicitor General Minardo Guevara says it is unnecessary to do so since there were no new matters raised in Khan's latest appeal. Khan told the ICC pretrial chamber the Philippine government has not substantiated its claim that it is working on crimes within the ICC's jurisdiction.
Ano mga possible scenarios? Unahin natin yung ang magiging resolution ng pretrial chamber ay pabor sa Philippine government. Ang ibig sabihin ay nag-a-agree ang pretrial chamber sa position natin na hindi na dapat ipagpatuloy ng ICC ang kanyang investigation dahil primarily ay ginagawa na ng Philippine government yung investigation and prosecution na yan ng same cases, no, or same situation na subject matter of the complaints before the ICC. Mm-hmm. So kung ganun ang mangyayari, ang ibig sabihin, po, effectively, halos tapos na itong issue about the ICC. Kung sakali naman na maging resolution ng pretrial chamber, ay i-deny ang request natin na wag nang ipagpatuloy ng ICC at tayo na lang, ay ibig sabihin doon, ang ICC prosecutor ay exactly itutuloy yung kanyang investigasyon. On the part of the Philippine government ng OSG, kung gano'n naman ang mangyayari, ang gagawin namin ay aakyat ang OSG sa appeals chamber ng ICC para idulog yung resolution ng pretrial chamber at kukwestiyonin namin na hindi tama ang magiging resolution na ipagpatuloy ng ICC ang kanyang investigasyon. So meron namang legal remedy kung sakali na maging ganon ang resolution ng pretrial chamber.
Guevara, meanwhile, LA's concerns on the impact of government's refusal to let the ICC continue its drug war probe.
The lalo nating pag i-intensify at i-accelerate yung pace ng ating sariling investigation and prosecution. Just to show to the ICC, to the international community, and to all possible investors that our legal and judicial system is functioning. Kung kasi lilitaw na ang ICC pa ang nag-iimbestiga sa mga bagay na may tuturing nating domestic affairs, ay lalong matatakot pumasok ang mga investors. Dahil ang ibig sabihin noon ay hindi reliable at hindi trustworthy ang legal and judicial system.
Philippine Justice Secretary Boyeng Remulla also not seeing any need to or for government to respond to the ICC prosecutor.
We are not members of the ICC. We are doing this out of the principle of comity. Again, I tell you. We are being courteous to them. We do everything at our own pace in our own country. This is our country, not their country. Not Khan's country, not the prosecutor's country. If they want to put our people in jail, there has to be a reason for it and there has to be due process first.
Senator Ronald De La Rosa, who is considered the chief architect and implementer of the controversial drug war, also echoing Remulla's line.
Ano siya, hello? Bakit siya mag-insist? Di ba? Kayo mismo, tanungin ko, you are witness to what is happening in this country. Meron ba tayong crimes against humanity na nangyayari dito? Wala naman. He is not a part of the Philippine government. He is not a part of the Philippine jurisdiction. And bakit siya nag-insist na makialam sa ating problema dito?
Former NTF LCAC spokesperson Lorraine Badoy defiant as she insists she did not threaten Judge Marlo Magdosa Malagar. In a Facebook post, Badoy said she takes full cognizance of the Supreme Court's warning, but she asserted she was simply practicing her constitutional right to an opinion when she questioned the judge's decision declaring that the CPP-NPA is not a terrorist organization. She also claimed her statement about killing Magdosa Malagar is not a threat, but a hypothetical question to illustrate the absurdity and danger of the judge's line of questioning or make that reasoning. For the president of the Integrated Bar of the Philippines, Badoy's statements can be considered a veiled threat.
That kind of defense is what we also call as a veiled threat, no? Kaya nga, parang ginamitan ng strategiya or cunningness. But yun po, precisely, to an ordinary person, that is kind of even in the legal community, it already seems to be tantamount to inciting to sedition. It's an invitation or inciting people to cause bodily harm and attack public officials who are merely doing their functions.
Meanwhile, Philippine Chief Justice Alexander Gismundok guarantees protection for members of the judiciary following Badoy's earlier statement.
Just like before, when there's a necessity for the court to make a statement warranted under the circumstances, the Supreme Court will take it sitting down and express its view.
Yeah.
Of course, avoiding prejudging in case a case should reach the court.
Yeah.
Well, basically, the Supreme Court will always be there to protect its judges, justices, court employees, and everyone in the judiciary.
Some lawmakers, meanwhile, hope the Supreme Court would actually go further and issue a show cause order to former NTF LCAC spokesperson Badoy so she can explain why she should not be cited in contempt of court.
Ito lahat ng ito, mga pasakalye no ni Lorraine Badoy, lahat yun was to create a climate of fear. Pero mo ba naman, sasabihin pa nila, kung bombahin namin kayo, maging lenient din kayo sa amin, sabi niya.
Si Yusek Badoy seems to be acting under a malicious interpretation and malicious objective of vilifying everybody who comes in contact with the CPP-NPA or any communist belief.
And joining us now this afternoon, we have Albay Representative Edsel Lagman. Congressman Lagman, good afternoon to you. Thanks for joining us today. Nice to see you again.
Good afternoon, Carmina.
Okay, we're going to talk about the budget in a bit, but first I want to jump off from the Lorraine Badoy controversy. You have been a subject of your commentary as well. At one point even said that you have intellectual dishonesty. But now let's talk about this controversy involving the former NTF LCAC spokesperson. What do you make of it? Does she deserve what she's getting right now? Should she be cited in contempt of court by the Supreme Court? What are your thoughts, Congressman?
I think she should learn how to be silent or to be moderate in her statements, because her statements would actually be promoting danger to the victims of her statements, like the good judge who decided that against the petition of the Department of Justice. We should submit to the judicial process. We could be critical of the decision. We could take our special or individual positions, but we should always respect the judicial process and the judges who render decision in these cases.
Mm-hmm. But when she said she was simply practicing her constitutional right to an opinion, Congressman Lagman, do you think that that was also no longer part of protected speech?
That is a futile defense for a very aggressive and arrogant speech, which should not be protected anymore by our Constitution. She has crossed the boundary of legitimate speech.
Okay, let's go to the budget now, Congressman Lagman. Earlier on in the budget deliberations, you have at more than one occasion raised your reservations, questioned the General Appropriations Bill, and yet when voting came around, you still voted for it. Why is that so, Congressman?
I have good reasons to vote yes for the General Appropriations Bill. One, we need a General Appropriations Act by the first day of next year. And also, we need to have provisions for the operation of the government, as well as for the extension of basic social and economic services to the marginalized, to the disadvantaged, and those left behind. Whatever inadequacies or deficiencies in the budgetary allocations, we will have to work within the process as well as within the allocations made. Number two, we should have a speedy approval of the General Appropriations Bill in order to avoid a reenactment of the present General Appropriations Act, because if we are not able to pass the budget on time and there will be a reenactment is two advantages to the chief executive, because he would have two budgets at his disposal. One, the reenacted budget, and two, the eventual General Appropriations Act which will be ultimately approved by the Congress. Three, my proposed amendments have been accepted, more particularly funding the zero budget for the education of special children, funding the zero budget for situ electrification, then also funding the zero budget for the treatment and prevention of cancer, particularly breast cancer. And also we have the Libreng Pasahe program, the Pantawid Pasahe Pasada program, the construction of the Freedom Memorial Museum in honor of the sacrifices and heroism of the victims of human rights violations during the martial law regime. Next, the augmentation of the depleted budget for the Commission on Human Rights. And finally, a provision for having a separate expenditure heading for family planning and reproductive health in order to underscore the importance of these programs, so, among many others.
So those were considered, but Congressman Lagman, the fact that those items that you mentioned had zero items or zero budget to begin with, or had lesser than what is expected to begin with, what does that tell you about where this administration's priorities lie?
Well, the pronouncements of the administration with respect to some progressive initiatives are not buttressed by the budgetary allocations in the national expenditure program coming from the president. But since Congress has the power of the purse, we should be able to exercise that. I have been telling new members of the House that we have that power. We should exercise it. We should never abdicate that power to the executive, because for the past three administrations, the executive has been trying to annex to a successful extent the power of the purse to the power of this purse. And if the executive will be able to have power of the purse as well as the power to disperse, we will have a budgetary dictatorship.
What happens to that power now, Congressman Lagman, considering that the GAB was passed by the lower house with massive lump sums, with massive confidential and intelligence funds? What happens to those now? Are you now just going to know that they're there and then just turn a blind eye to them?
No. With respect to the lump sums, I would propose that there should be some special provisions so that these lump sums could be straightened out, and their disbursement could be subject to congressional oversight.
And talking about congressional oversight, Congressman, we are living, as you know, in extraordinary times. The pandemic is still there. Having the budget is one thing, but spending it properly, that's another thing altogether. So when you talk about oversight, what particular departments are you really going to keep a close watch on to make sure that the budget is spent properly to benefit those who need it the most?
Well, practically all departments should be subject to oversight. And I was suggesting to the membership of the House that we should be frugal and judicious in allocating confidential and intelligence funds, because according to the COA, despite the audit of the COA of these funds, we are not given the results of the audit. In other words, the auditing process is behind closed doors between the auditor and the auditor, and Congress is not given the necessary information so that it could exercise its oversight functions. So if that is so, then we should be frugal and judicious in granting these allocations for confidential and intelligence funds. And I am suggesting to the Committee on Appropriation that they should be reduced so that we could be able to realign funds for the necessary budgetary allocations for those projects and programs which have zero or deficient allocations.
Finally, Congressman Lagman, let's talk about the ICC. The ICC prosecutor's rejection of the Philippine government's position regarding the investigation into the drug war killings here in the Philippines under the regime of former President Rodrigo Duterte. The Solicitor General, in an interview earlier today, has already said they will no longer forward a reply. But you have said so in so many ways, so many interviews, that the Philippine government should cooperate with the ICC. Now, I asked that question to Solicitor General Minardo Guevara this morning, and I said, you know, I asked him, the administration now is sort of projecting that it is open for business to the international community. And what would happen to this projection if it's not going to cooperate with an international organization like the ICC? And he said precisely why the Philippines has to show that we are able to handle things or on our own, that we do not need an external investigation entity to investigate matters locally. What are your thoughts regarding that? And as a matter of policy, he said that, you know, this is up, that it is a matter of policy, that he's not about to comment on it. But he also said that it would be better if the Philippines can show the ICC that it is able to handle things on its own. Your thoughts on that, Congressman?
Well, in the first place, it is not a question of domestic policy. It is a question of jurisdiction of the International Criminal Court and its prosecutors. And the ICC and its prosecutors have jurisdiction over reported crimes against humanity, because all of this happened before the country departed from the ICC or the Rome Statute. Number two, we say that we are doing precisely the investigation and our criminal justice system is working. They always claim what is known as complementarity. But the question is, are we prosecuting the principal respondents in this case? We are not. We are just investigating the small fries, but not the big wigs. So there is no proper invocation of complementarity. Next, if we want to be attracting foreign investors, we should not be quote and unquote an outlaw in the jurisdiction of the International Criminal Court, because we should be able to tell the investors that here in the Philippines, we have the rule of law. And if we do not prosecute or even attempt to prosecute the principal respondents in these cases, then we are not having a proper functioning of our judicial system.
But conversely, though, Congressman, do we need an external entity to prove that? Exactly what you said, that there is rule of law here in this country. Do we need an external entity to be able to to give that picture?
When we were members of the Rome Statute or the International Criminal Court, we submitted to the jurisdiction of that body and its prosecutors. And as long as these offenses were committed before we withdrew our membership, then we should accept the jurisdiction of the International Criminal Court and their prosecutors, so that once and for all, we would be able to find out from an independent agency whether actually we are having a well-functioning judicial system, and also whether we are having obedience or observance of the rule of law. Because all the statements that we have the rule of law here, that we are investigating those who are responsible for the so-called or reported human crimes against justice, these are all biased statements coming from officials of the government. Let an independent body resolve that question and let us submit to the jurisdiction of the International Criminal Court.
Alba, and Representative Ed Seligman, sorry to cut you there, but we run out of time. Thank you for joining us, as always. We appreciate your insights on all these current issues. Thanks again. You take care. Keep safe.
Thank you. And thank you too, Carmina.
That was Albay Representative Ed Seligman joining us this noon. Moving on to more news. The Philippines Disaster Management Agency reports one more casualty due to Typhoon Karding days after it barreled through Luzon. Our correspondent Bianca Dava now joins us on the line with the latest death toll. Bianca, over to you.
Carmina, the number of deaths due to Super Typhoon Karding has now climbed to 11, according to the NDRRMC's latest report. One more drowning incident resulted in one individual's death in Antipolo, Rizal, added to the total death toll due to Karding. On Wednesday, NDRRMC spokesperson Rafi Alejandro said there were 10 initial deaths reported, including the five rescuers who perished in a flood a flash flood in San Miguel, Bulacan. Another individual who died after a dike got destroyed in Cabangan, Zambales. One more person who died in a motorcycle accident in a flooded street in San Felipe, Zambales. And another who was buried in a landslide in Burdeos, Quezon Province. Meanwhile, six more people, five from Mercedes Camarines Norte and one from Antipolo Rizal, are still missing. The NDRRMC said more than 176,000 families were affected by the onslaught of karding in various areas in Luzon, of which we still have a total of 6,435 families staying in evacuation centers at the moment. The estimated cost of damage to infrastructure has climbed to 23.45 pesos, while the amount of Typhoon Karding's damage to agriculture has hit 2 billion pesos. The Agriculture Department says crops like rice and corn were the most affected, and the agency is now warning of possible price increases of agricultural products.
Maaaring magkaroon ng pagtaas, lalong-lalo na sa alay at gulay, sapagat ito ay at hindi tinamaan sa Central Luzon, o kaya't maaaring tumaas ng mga 15 to 20% ang ating presyo sa kalakalan sa palengke.
So far, more than 14.6 million pesos worth of assistance was provided to affected individuals, according to the NDRRMC. Back to you, Carmina.
Thanks a lot, Bianca Dava. And back here in the newsroom in Bulacan, the estimated damage due to karding is now pegged at around 1.2 billion pesos. Governor Daniel Fernando says they're holding off on declaring a state of calamity in the province until they get a clearer picture of the scale of the impact on infrastructure. But he admits their calamity funds may also not be enough.
Meron naman pong dudukutin na yes, meron naman po.
Meron naman.
Talaga pong kulang na kulang talaga. And hihingi talaga tayo ng suporta. End of the year na eh, di ba? Nauubos na yung ating mga ginamit sa COVID, sa gamot.
Over in Nueva Ecija, the municipality of Aliaga distributes housing materials to families hit by Typhoon Karding. Our correspondent Jervis Manahan joins us now on the line with that story. Jervis, what more can you tell us?
Yes, Carmina, more than 1,000 families were affected by the typhoon here in Aliaga, Nueva Ecija. They have been receiving food packs, but aside from that, the local government distributed construction materials to help families rebuild their homes. They have distributed materials to 2 barangays already and is scheduled to distribute to 5 more barangays today. Families only need to present a certificate of indigency and a photo of the destroyed home. Aside from this, damage to agriculture is also extensive here in Aliaga. The municipal government is still checking how to help affected farmers. Even schools that served as evacuation centers incurred some damage. Classes in Aliaga remain cancelled today. Carmina.
Thanks a lot. Jervis Manahan there joining us on the line. And now an update on the weather. Severe tropical storm Luis is now outside the Philippine area of responsibility, but rains are still expected in parts of Luzon. Let's get more details now from ABS-CBN's resident meteorologist Ariel Rojas. Ariel.
Hi, Carmina. Triple weather related good news for our kapamilya. Luis, with the traditional name Roque, intensified into a severe tropical storm but has left the Philippine area of responsibility at 9 a.m. today. It did not affect the country. The low pressure area east of eastern Visayas also dissipated at the same time. And the southwest monsoon or habagat has withdrawn to the middle of the West Philippine Sea, and most of the country will have sunny and warm conditions today. However, intense thunderstorms are still likely this afternoon in La Union, Benguet, parts of Karding ravaged Central Luzon and Calabarzon, Masbate, Western and Central Visayas, Zamboanga Peninsula, Lanao and Misamis provinces, and Davao region. We are also expecting thunderstorms today, especially later in the evening here in Metro Manila. No other weather disturbance is seen to form near or affect the country until the weekend, and the warm easterlies will prevail over the eastern section of the archipelago in the coming days. That's the latest on the weather. Back to you, Carmina.
Thanks a lot, Ariel Rojas there, our resident meteorologist. We're going to take a quick break now. Up ahead, tragedies hit the U.S. as Hurricane Ian triggers massive storm surges in Florida, while another school shooting rocks California. More on those stories when we return. You're watching Dateline Philippines here on ANC. We'll be right back. And we're back. Here's still a Dateline Philippines here on ANC. Here's another look at our headlines this noon. The record 5.29 trillion peso national budget for 2023 approved by Philippine House lawmakers. The Philippine government sees no reason to respond to the International Criminal Court prosecutor's renewed request to probe the Duterte administration's drug war. The death toll from Typhoon Karding rises to 11. And 2 million households in Florida left without power as Hurricane Ian lashes through the state. Back with more news, the Philippine Health Department partners with a soup kitchen to vaccinate homeless people against COVID-19. Our very own Rafael Busano now joins us with details. Raf, go ahead.
Hi, Carmina. You know, we've seen the vaccines being brought closer to people with vaccination sites being set up in workplaces, marketplaces, and even schools. But this is actually the first time that we've seen vaccines being brought closer specifically to homeless, street-dwelling families and individuals. This after the Martha's Hot Kitchen, an NGO, partnered with the Philippine Disaster Resilience Foundation and the Department of Health to bring the vaccines closer specifically to this portion of the population. Health Undersecretary and Officer in Charge Maria Rosario Vergere administered some of the shots to individuals, and she says the move made them realize that it is possible to reach homeless street dweller families. As the very mobile and exposed to so many people, Vergere says they too belong to the vulnerable population. With government saying it will not leave anyone behind, the DOH committed that more people from this sector will be reached and that they are already looking at how they can replicate and vaccinate the homeless in other regions. This effort, of course, is in line with government's thrust of increasing the boosted population, which currently stands at 19.2 million for the first booster shot. Of course, the special vaccination week has commenced in all areas after seeing a brief halt in Luzon due to Super Typhoon Karding. Now, in just a little while, a media briefing will be taking place here at the DOH gym, where we expect to get more updates on the country's pandemic situation and other health issues. Carmina.
Thanks a lot. Rafael Busano there joining us live. Back in the newsroom, the Commission on Appointments has approved the designation of Enrique Manalo as Philippine Foreign Affairs Secretary. During the confirmation hearing, lawmakers grilled Manalo about his stance on several issues, like the dispute over Saba. Senator Francis Tolentino said the DFA should seize the opportunity to stake the Philippines' claim in Saba following the legal victory of the heirs of the Sulu Sultanate against the Malaysian government. According to Manalo, prior to his appointment and before the start of the new administration, the government already had a cluster committee that studied the impact of that award. The secretary said he plans to reconvene the body to continue its assessment. Meanwhile, 15 appointees of President Marcos were bypassed by the Commission on Appointments due to lack of time. The list includes Finance Secretary Benjamin Diokno, Social Welfare Secretary Erwin Tulfo, and Socioeconomic Planning Secretary Arsenio Balisacan. The first regular session of Congress is set to pause from October 1 to November 6. Senate President Miguel Zubiri said these officials would now have to seek reappointment from Marcos. The Philippine Senate ratifies a bicameral conference committee report that seeks to postpone December's village and youth council polls. Senator J.V. Ejercito says the BICAM agreed to move the polls from December 5 this year to the last Monday of October 2023. Those elected will start their term on November 30, 2023. Minority Senators Coco Pimentel and Risa Ontiveros, as well as Senator Pia Cayetano, were the only legislators who opposed the report. Comelec earlier said postponing the village and youth council elections will cost government an additional 10 billion pesos. News overseas now, Hurricane Ian plows into Florida's Gulf Coast, unleashing powerful winds and torrential rains. Ian has weakened into a Category 1 storm hours after making landfall with a might of a Category 4 hurricane. It triggered massive storm surges, transforming Florida's sandy beaches into a disaster zone. The National Hurricane Center said the storm surge along the West Coast make that West Coast has likely peaked, but floodwaters will take time to recede. According to a U.S. tracker, some 2 million households across the state are without power. Ian is one of the most powerful storms to hit the U.S. in recent years. Before slamming into Florida, the storm pounded Cuba, leaving at least two people dead. The U.S. Border Patrol also said at least 20 Cuban migrants are missing after their boat sank. Four survived by swimming to shore in the Florida Keys, while three were rescued by the U.S. Coast Guard. U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris arrives in South Korea a day after North Korea conducted missile tests. Harris landed at Osan Air Base from Tokyo after attending the state funeral of former Japanese Prime Minister Abe Shinzo. While in Seoul, Harris will meet with South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol. She will also visit the heavily fortified demilitarized zone that separates the two Koreas. Pyongyang conducted two ballistic missile launches ahead of Harris's arrival, one on Sunday and then another one again on Wednesday. Harris accused the North of threatening regional stability with these launches. Another school shooting rocks the U.S., this time in California. At least six people were injured after they were shot at a campus in Oakland. Authorities said two of the victims remain in the hospital while the other four had been released. It is unclear if the victims were students or school personnel. Police said they were searching for one shooter, but noted other individuals may be involved. They have yet to determine a motive.
A little bit after 12:45, officers responded to shots being fired, or possible shots being fired in the area of 8200 Fontaine Street. Upon arrival, our officers located six victims with apparent gunshot wounds. All those victims were transported to local hospitals where their conditions right now are currently unknown. We are asking all the public to please avoid the area as this is still an active crime scene. If anyone does have video or may have witnesses, we're please asking them to contact the Oakland Police Department.
A small breakthrough in the fight against monkeypox, as early data show the Danish-made vaccine is highly effective, according to the preliminary analysis posted by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Unvaccinated individuals are 14 times more likely to get monkeypox compared to those who have received their first shot. This is the first concrete evidence that the JYNNEOS vaccine is providing some level of protection against monkeypox. The U.S. has so far administered 680,000 doses of JYNNEOS. The country has recorded nearly 26,000 monkeypox cases. That's the highest tally in the whole world. The U.S. dismisses Russia's claims that it is behind the huge gas leaks on the Nord Stream pipelines. The spokesperson of Moscow's foreign ministry posted on social media a video of President Joe Biden back in February, saying the U.S. will bring an end to Nord Stream's pipeline too if Russian tanks cross Ukraine's border. The spokeswoman asserted Biden is obliged to answer if Washington made good on its threat. Three unexplained gas leaks preceded by two explosions occurred on the Baltic Sea's Nord Stream 1 and 2 pipelines on Monday. Russia says it has launched what it called an international terrorism investigation on those leaks. The UN Security Council is also set to meet on Friday at Russia's request. Back here at home, authorities conduct random drug testing at a bus station in Quezon City. For more on that, we're now joined by our correspondent, Rafi Santos. Rafi, how did the random testing go?
Yes, for me, the random drug testing at the local bus station in Quezon City went well. The LTO confiscated two licenses from two drivers who tested positive on the initial screening conducted by the Philippine Drug Enforcement Agency. The LTO confiscated their licenses while they awaited confirmatory tests done by the BDEA. Meanwhile, the LTO has reminded motorists to avoid driving under the influence to avoid accidents. They also warned those apprehended to be subject to harsh penalties and criminal charges. Data from the LTO show that as of that 538 road accidents in NCR each year, more than 400 of these were caused by drivers under the influence of alcohol. The agency has also its LTO on wheels program with the aim of speeding up transactions for its clients. First up was in Pamkaringal in Quezon City. The service policemen and their dependents can accommodate 400 vehicle registrations a day, as well as process new and old drivers.
Okay, Rafi Santos, they're joining us on the line. We're going to try and get you back on the line, Rafi, as your audio kind of went choppy for a while there, but we are going to have your report in our succeeding newscast, so be sure to stay tuned for that. Rafi Santos there, joining us on the line. Well, back here in the newsroom, a measure requiring the registration of SIM cards up for President Marcos's signature. That's after both houses of Congress ratified their bicameral conference committee reports on the proposal consolidating the House and the Senate's versions of the SIM card registration bill. Senator Grace Poe, the co-chairperson of the bicameral panel, says the Senate version will be used as the working draft, but with reconciled provisions. As for House Speaker Martin Romualdez, he says the measure will not only promote responsibility among SIM card users, but also help authorities address cyber crimes. The renewed push for a SIM card registration law follows the recent spread of personalized text scams. A similar measure was passed in the 18th Congress, but it was vetoed by former President Rodrigo Duterte due to a provision on social media registration. As the Philippine peso continues to or its slide against the U.S. dollar, importers are taking losses as they act as a buffer between the greenback's strength and the customers. Let's hear more from our very own Warren de Guzman.
Ralph Ariño has had to take some losses on deals selling imported lights just to keep his customers happy and shielded from the effects of the strong U.S. dollar and the sliding Philippine peso. But he is hoping the peso doesn't weaken any further.
Malamang sa malamang, may mga projects kami na hindi na namin i-grab, no? Yung opportunity. So may mga bibitawan talaga na projects. And at the same, pero yung operation naman, hindi naman mawawala. Tuloy-tuloy pa rin. Kung sa industry namin nakaka-survive pa rin, mas marami sigurong industry ang hindi na talaga kakayanin even at this point. Yung sa current na dollar value, no? So I hope na hindi na umangat pa.
While some sectors are hurting because of the dollar's strength, others should be benefiting, like the IT BPO sector, which earns in dollars. The industry estimates 70% of its business emanates from North America. Aside from the income, Filipino BPOs should be able to attract more customers because the weaker peso makes their services more affordable to dollar earners. But the IT and Business Process Association of the Philippines, or IBPAP, says because the dollar is strengthening against most other currencies, it's a wash.
It's a volatile situation, and we've seen the recent strength of the U.S. dollar affect other currencies as well. And many of those currencies are also the currencies of other emergent IT BPM locations.
Some are saying an exchange rate of 65 is not out of the question. And many, including the IMF and World Bank, expect the dollar to continue to strengthen against global currencies. The World Bank notes the dollar's strength has had varying effects on different currencies, and the Philippine peso has remained somewhat resilient against other currencies in the region, alongside other major ASEAN economies. In fact, the World Bank sees the Philippines as one of the bright spots in the region, thanks to a combination of relatively low inflation and high growth. IBPAP expects to contribute to that growth, and Madrid shares potential investors have been knocking on his doors.
There are more than a handful of investors who have been actively considering the Philippines. In the past months alone, the whole year actually, the office, has been busy entertaining and responding to investor interest, which has resulted in our being quite bullish about our near and medium-term prospects. So there is absolutely no shortage of interest in providing and offshoring work to the Philippines. However, competition has gotten also more fierce because of this pent-up demand for offshoring and nearshoring work.
The Philippine Central Bank recently raised its growth forecast for BPO receipts this year to 9%, up slightly from an earlier forecast of 8%. It expects BPO income, alongside remittances from overseas Filipinos and travel receipts, to help stabilize the peso toward the end of 2022. The BSP expects travel receipts to grow 250% this year as COVID restrictions ease. Warren de Guzman, ABS-CBN News.
The Meat Importers and Traders Association appeals to Philippine President Ferdinand Marcos Jr. to issue a new executive order lowering import duties on pork. The group wants a 5% in quota and 15% out quota tariff rates for pork. It says such a move will help address both supply issues and inflation woes in the country. As it stands, there is a 15% in quota and 25% out quota tariff rates for imported pork products until the end of the year. Water rates seem to go up next year as the Philippine peso continues to weaken against the U.S. dollar. But the Metropolitan Water Works Sewerage System, or MWSS, says it is doing its best to minimize the impact. Chief Regulator Patrick T. explains the agency is revising concession agreements, which will reflect the removal of the Foreign Currency Differential Adjustment, or FCDA, in water bills. The FCDA allows the MWSS to recover losses from foreign exchange movements.
There will be no more FCDA, meaning the losses will no longer be passed on to the public. Basically, what would happen is, unlike before, that the foreign currency losses will be recovered within 1 year, this will not be recovered over a span of several years. We expect that the revised concession agreement to be effective within a few weeks. So after that, any further losses will no longer be passed on to the public. We are conducting a rate rebasing, so we expect to be finished by November.
Google is offering thousands of scholarships to Filipinos to help them upskill amid the rise in digitalization. Jackie Pascual tells us more.
Sheila Manzano is a civil engineer graduating student and is now the first scholar of the Google Career Certificates program. Aside from the diploma from her school, she wants to get an online course certificate to help her future endeavors.
I believe that those courses, after ko makakuha ng certificate, it will give me a lot of advantages kapag nag-a-apply na ako ng work.
Sheila is just the first of 39,000 scholars to join Google Philippines' online certificate program, which may last from 6 months to 1 year. Courses to choose from are IT support, UX design, project management, and data analytics.
This is really our commitment towards ensuring that our workforce is competitive and that they can actually land jobs in the growing IT field. As we're seeing that there is actually a growth in demand for IT-related jobs.
Google partnered with government agencies and Telco Globe for this project, which aims to upskill Filipinos and equip them with much-needed knowledge and skills.
This represents another milestone in our team's efforts to assist the nation in advancing toward a digital economy. Upskilling should be at the forefront of the development of the ICT industry sector in the Philippines. It's not just about infrastructure, but it's also about people structure.
Everyone 18 years old and above can apply regardless of school or work background.
We see that education is a very important pillar. So yung mga minenso namin kanina, digital wellness and responsibility, meron tayong learning for technical and vocational courses.
The telco will announce on its social media pages how to apply for the scholarship, which will automatically be approved provided there are slots available. The IT and Business Process Association of the Philippines said there will be over 1 million new workers in the country in the next 6 years, and there really is a need to revise existing curriculum and introduce new and future relevant courses. Jackie Pascual, ABS-CBN News.
And before we go, homegrown restaurant Jollibee makes it to the Billboard Capital of the World. Ads featuring Jollibee's famous Chicken Joy are now displayed at the middle of the iconic New York Times Square. This follows Jollibee's store opening at the tourist spot last August. For more on this story, head on over to news.abs-cbn.com. And that'll do it for today. Thanks for joining us. I'm Karina Constantino. If you want to revisit today's episode, you can play back this newscast on ANC's YouTube channel and on ANC 24/7 on Facebook. Keep safe. Keep it here on ANC.